Transform the way you hunt with the all-new Base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie mobile app. Moultrie Mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is a guy that I actually met while hunting doves on public land here in Missouri. Now, it's not very often that you make great friends while you're hunting public land. You know, you're upset at the guys because they're sky blasting at things, or they took your honey hole, or they're just doing something wrong. But Luther and I kind of hit it off after hunting the morning, just hearing a little bit more of his story and now reconnecting for this episode. I'm pretty excited. We're going to chat all about his early season success. He and I both shot bucks earlier than we ever have in the year. We both did it with a bow, both from a saddle setup. And we're going to hear all about that, as well as him getting his family out there and how that's looked so far. So I'm excited. Let's jump in.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Luther Roten. And Luther and I met, let's see, was it 2 years ago or was it last year?
In the Dove 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
The Dang, gauntlet. That's...
Oh, yeah, because this season I didn't even get out. I was out of town. I haven't missed a dove season in forever, but they said it was pretty rough.
I saw two birds the first day.
Oh, my gosh.
It was terrible.
That's crazy, because normally that spot is just killer. But, yeah, we just ran into each other because you were set up in this tiny little strip of sunflowers right in front of us. And we're like, dude, that guy's killing all the – like, he has all the close shots on birds. And you turned around and you're like, hey, there's more room in here for you guys if you want. And I was like, absolutely. And, of course, we came in a little bit too late. If we had done that in the morning, we would have had a lot more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we were – I was standing there. It seemed like the doves were flying on both sides of us, but I always had a shot at all of them. You guys are getting like 20% of the shots. So it kind of worked out.
At least you were piling them up. Like, if you were up there just shooting at everything and nothing was dropping, I would have been like, really? Come on, this sucks. But no, you were killing it. But yeah, we met up out there, public land, and you were super cool. There were some other guys out there, maybe not as much, but after that, we're like, we just sat in BS for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So I guess that's how we know each other. But for the listeners who don't know you, would you mind giving a brief intro of yourself, maybe hunting history, what you like to do now?
Sure. So I kind of just grew up doing it like, you know, yourself, a lot of other people did. Was raised on a farm, and it was just kind of tradition to go. You know, we did a little different back then, you know. Go with our grandparents and pull out and park our truck in the woods and sit in the bed and wait for them to come out and drink coffee. But you kind of grow in advance. And we just kind of excelled in everything. I like hunting everything. There's nothing that I won't go out and do or try to learn. If I've not done something, I'm very interested in learning it. So
yeah,
I actually wasn't even much of a dove hunter until 8 or 9 years ago. And then, I mean, I just started eating it up, and then I got down the rabbit hole of how to shoot a shotgun and what lead and more lead and some lead and everything was. So
yeah,
just obsessive. I'm pretty sure it's in our DNA. Now I'm pretty much just work all the time and raising a family, man.
Nice.
Awesome. Yep. Two sons, a daughter, married. It's great.
Dude, that's so sweet.
Busy.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, like hunting and having a family, like the challenge of that and balancing it and figuring out, you know, how much time do I spend? How much time do I not? And I tell people all the time, I'm like, listen, the better husband and father you are when you're at home, the more likely you're going to get to go out.
When you reap what you sow 100%. And so my oldest son, he's 12, my bonus son. And so he started getting into hunting pretty about a couple of years ago, old enough to go. So that helps.
Yeah.
Keeps both of us outdoors. He gets to learn the craft and the trade and those, I don't know, those woodsmanship skills. And then my wife actually two nights ago killed her first deer with a bow. So
nice.
Kind of getting the family mixed into it, and now it's everybody else is hunting and I try to back out a little bit. Yeah. So yeah, it's a lot
dude,
of fun.
Dude, that's
though.
So cool that she just got one. I'm actually, after this podcast, I'm taking my wife to the archery shop because I miss her birthday every single year for elk season. And so Yeah, it's that's always fun. The nice thing is she doesn't really do a lot for her birthday. Like I planned something 1 year for her and everyone's like at this restaurant waiting. We've got balloons, we've got all kinds of stuff. And later on, she's like, you know, I really just kind of wanted to hang out at the house and like, chill out and watch Netflix or something. And I was like, really?
Of course.
But yeah every
can,
year
I can do I'm, that too. Yeah.
I feel like we just are never around for one another's birthdays. And so this year I went out elk hunting and now she's been talking for like a couple weeks. She used to shoot bow at this archery league, like, I mean, very intro level. She was trying to figure it out. It was like an all women's night out in Colorado, but she's like, man, I want a bow. So I'm taking her to the bow shop after this podcast. She's going to get a bow. And I was like, babe, you could kill a buck during rifle season and again in archery. And she's like, wait, what? Are you kidding me? She's never killed one. She's killed a doe during rifle season a couple of years back, but that's it.
Oh, that's awesome. Like it's totally different. And from what we just experienced a couple of nights ago, it was a lot of different emotions than what she actually expected after she actually, you know, pulled the trigger. You know, it's not shooting a rifle. And it's not harvesting an animal with a rifle. It's very personal. So, and for a mom, that's a totally different ball game. I don't care who you are. You're genetically wired to have more empathy and it just hits different. So, but that's great. That's great. Where are you guys at right now? Are you guys on the road right now? Or are you back home?
No. So we're in Springfield. Springfield for, we'll head out Thursday of next week. Going up to Wisconsin for rifle. So we'll have like 5 days to hunt. We'll probably hunt Saturday through Wednesday and then head up to Wisconsin. And my son is six. And so he's super excited. Right before this, I was like, all right, bud, here we go. And I pull up the deer and I'm like, all right, show me where you have to shoot it. And it points to it. And I'm like, okay, now if we're sitting there, how loud can we talk? And he's like, this loud, Dad, this loud.
Yeah.
And I was like, perfect, bud. And so we're working on everything. Hopefully I can get him one down here. And then my daughter, she's four and she's like, can I go out? And she's like as big as my son is. And I was like, okay, well, you can't do it here. But in Wisconsin, there's no age requirements at all.
Really?
So I was like, honestly, I could probably get the rifle. Like I'm just going to use the AR because everything we shoot there is at like 75 yards tops. We're in the woods.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I could get her set up and potentially get her a deer. I was like, if everyone in my family shot a deer this year, I'd feel like the most accomplished dad and husband ever.
Oh, you'd be on cloud nine and so would they.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see how it goes, but I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah. It's coming right up. I mean, I've just walked inside from building a platform for a blind that I bought for family use because I got a 2-year-old, so he's coming up and it's 6 foot wide and 6 foot tall and just got a lot of space. So we're trying to make it to where it's a little more family friendly. So
yeah, that's
not as intense as you and I get into it with, but a saddle, like the other night, the saddle made it so easy. You can turn any set that you have into a double.
Yep.
So if you have sets that are permanently out there, you can take your kid up, you know, have them on the lifeline, have them harnessed, put them in that stand, and then you can just hang and bang right behind them.
Yep.
So it creates way more opportunities than what I ever even expected it to be.
Yeah. So see, that's what I'm excited about because you and I both switched to saddles and we've had success already this year and we're going to dive into those stories, but the saddle system just opens up a whole new level of opportunity for movement, like to get into a tree in a quick amount of time. Cause I used to hate having to set up like ladder stands. There's no way to get up in the tree quietly if you're having to set a ladder stand up or even a hang on, screwing in pegs or whatever. But now I'm like, it's going to be really easy. Yep. All I have to do is hook the platform stand or the hang on stand behind me and I can climb up the tree, hang that on, have them follow me up or go before me. And then we can do a double set really easy without carrying two stands in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, you know, you kind of want, so it was her first time hunting. It was the first deer she'd ever drawn back on. And it was, it all worked out. And she killed a deer at like 4:45 in the afternoon. So we had an hour and a half of an elk hunt left. I mean, this never happens. I've never pulled a deer out with daylight, maybe two or three times, unless it was the next morning. And it all just worked out. And I was like, okay, if this is the luck that it's going to bring, I'm not getting back in a regular stand. I'm just not doing it. I'm not doing it at all. So,
dang, that's sweet. Did she have a saddle set up too then?
No, we just had another, I think it's like a lone wolf set up with some Realtree quick steps that I put up last year under in like a little cedar thicket that was adjacent to, so to the north was two big oak trees.
Okay.
And I mean, it's just one of those feed trees that, you know, deer are going to come to. You can pretty well hunt it in any wind because deer come from all directions. So you're going to bump some of them, but I mean, the others are still going to come through. So it just works out really well. And it already being set up, and I'd already been in it this year just to test it. So I was comfortable with that.
Yeah.
The wind did the opposite of what it was supposed to, and we still killed a deer. So,
dang.
Yeah, you know, everything worked out.
See, I love when things don't work out as far as wind go or as far as weather, and then it still happens, because I just, at the end of the day, I feel like as hunters, we complicate things a lot. And even in that at elk camp, like that final day, getting guys on these two bulls.
Yeah,
we got set up and the wind was blowing straight at them. I mean, like as dead on at them as it could. And it was like 30 miles an hour when we first got there. They just didn't seem to care at all. And I'm like,
yeah,
see, as hunters, we're always like, oh, dude, you got to do this right. You got to do that right. You're like washing your stuff and scent free detergent. Some people are buying a separate washer and dryer for it. And at the end of the day, like, anything could happen out there.
You can't kill them if you're going to worry about it the whole time. You will never take the next step into just saying screw it. If you bump deer, you bump deer, dude. That's, you're going to bump more deer than you kill. Just get used to it.
Yeah,
you know, you're not going to have as many deer under you or within range that you bump ever in your life. So go for it.
Yeah,
you know, even on private land or public land, go for it.
Yeah, you just, if you're not out there trying, if you don't feel confident, like, in my opinion, confidence is one of the best things you can do to prepare for deer hunting.
Absolutely.
If you go out there doubting it the whole time or worrying about everything, you're not going to be that good of a hunter. You know, if you're thinking like, oh, dude, I'm not going to see him. The weather's not right. The wind's not right. I'm not in the right tree. You're just not going to pay as close of attention as you would if you had the mindset of like, dude, it's about to happen. It could happen any second. Like, I'm going to be on high alert. I'm going to be in tune with the woods, what's going on. And it's just a different ball game when you go into it with that mindset.
Yeah. I mean, the world, like the current world wants you just to be doubtful.
Yep.
But whenever your natural instincts come out, that is not doubtful. If you'll just let your instincts roll, you're going to mess up. But if you will let what your DNA says to do, all of the doubt just kind of falls away, but you have to be able to deal with failure because you're going to fail.
Yeah. Yep.
But you got to be okay with it. You can't be afraid of failure. You're going to fail. Just fail and learn and fail and learn. That's all hunting is, man.
Yep. See, we can jump into the stories of our early season success, because you and I both killed deer earlier than we ever have this year, both in a saddle with a bow. And I, on the whole subject of, you know, things are going to mess up, I went out there and I had just ordered a saddle system. I had like 2 days to hunt when we were going to be passing back through Springfield, and I had pulled all my tree stands down so that I would force myself to get a saddle. Cause I was like, I know if I have tree stands up, I'm going to just go and sit in them. I'm not going to buy a saddle. And
push it was an easy button.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, dude, I can't do it. So I literally pulled my tree stands down before I left, knowing that I was going to be getting into a saddle in a hunting scenario for the first time, like in one of my 2 days that I had to hunt. And so I hopped on Go Wild, ordered a bunch of stuff off there, saddle, sticks, platform, everything, and I had never used it at all. Like, luckily it came in right before we were on our way back, and I was like, crap, I have to order this right now and see if I can get it shipped. So I went and picked it up that day from the UPS store. I get out to the driveway of my hunting property. I unbox the sticks. I'm assembling sticks and the platform in the driveway, thinking like, okay, if there is a scent issue from the manufacturer, like, it doesn't matter what my clothes smell like. They're going to be like, that smells like a factory. I assemble everything, hook it on my backpack, walk out to the woods, find a tree. And I'm like, dude, this looks like a great tree. I could see a path right underneath it. And I had cameras out, but it doesn't tell you enough, you know, like, no matter how many cameras you have, it'll never give you all the information. But I could see, coming from a bedding area to the field, I was like, this looks like a great spot. Getting a tree like 5 to 10 yards into the woods. And it took me forever to climb it. I'm like, all right, this is new, you know, like, trying to climb it with a saddle, strapping sticks as I'm climbing up it. I was like,
a new language.
Oh, yeah, for real. And so I finally get up in it. And I'm like sweaty, right? I'm like, dang, that's a workout for my first time. And get set up. I'm like, okay, this is right, this is wrong. Trying to adjust, try to get comfortable. And it wasn't that long after, I hear these squirrels just going nuts in the woods. And then they all scatter. And I was like, okay. And so I listen for like 5 more seconds. And I just hear heavy footsteps. And I'm like, that's a deer. And I've got my,
that's definitely a deer.
Oh yeah. I've got a bow hanger that my bow's hooked onto. And then I've got a GoPro on each side of it. One facing the beans, one facing me. Cause I'm thinking for sure I'm going to get a shot into the beans. Sure. I had seen one of my target bucks on camera during daylight twice that week. Cause I've got cellular cameras out this year. And I'm like, dude, it could happen. It might not, but it definitely could.
Yep.
And so I'm like thinking, okay, it's going to be that direction. It's going to be that direction. And I hear it behind me in the woods. And I'm like, shoot, man. So I slowly turn and I just see a rack coming through. And I'm like, I'm shooting this buck right now.
And
I grab my bow. I grab my bow because I had that night. I had that night and the next morning to hunt. And that was it. And so I was like, that was going to be my whole early season archery. And so I grab my bow and I get turned around, and all of a sudden I see another rack and another rack and another rack. And there's like 4 bucks coming through the woods straight towards me. The front one is at 19.6 yards and he's facing straight on, but he's feeding. And so I'm like, okay, I had 2 shooting windows, 1 to his right, 1 to his left. So if he turned either way, I could shoot him.
Yep.
Or if he just picked his head up, I could just do a front on shot, which I've done inside of 20 yards before, and it's been very effective. Luckily, I haven't lost anything from that. And so I was like, I'm just going to get drawn back. He's going to lift his head up. He's going to turn left. He's going to turn right. No matter what, I've got a shot. Yep. I draw back. Sure enough, he just slowly turns to his left, to my right. Open window at 19 and a half. Boom, smoke him. And I'm like, I can't believe this just happened. What is going on? And he runs 10 yards and he gets 10 yards away from where I shot him and he just stops broadside. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, he's just standing there, not like stumbling, not tipsy, but I can see blood coming out right behind his shoulder. But after 2 minutes, I was like, I'm going to knock another arrow. I don't have a clean shot right here, but I've got a saddle system. I'm going to swing around the tree, lean way back and get another shot. And so I did lean back, quartering away shot, put it through the back of his ribs. I watch him run out into the woods and tip over, or into the field and tip over. And I was like, dude, had I not had that saddle system, I would have never got the second shot. I may have not had the first shot because it would have been like leaning off the side of my stand, completely turned around, hopefully getting drawn back, even though the tree was right there. And so after that, I was like, dude, I will never go back to anything but a saddle system.
With the saddle, I mean, you can get in and hunt really aggressively or move them while you're hunting and never bump anything. But that's awesome. That's great. A day and a half essentially to hunt. And that's what you got to play with.
Oh yeah. So I called my buddy Drew, who we were planning on hunting together that night, and he couldn't. And I was like, dude, just smoked a big one. And he's like, you're kidding me. And I was like, no, I'm serious. I just videoed it going down out in the field. And so back to the GoPros, I had a wrist remote on to hit, like to turn the GoPros on. And so when he came in, I was like, dude, I'm not going to be like fumbling with him trying to hit record. So I just pushed the button on my wrist, shoot him. Turns out my GoPros were in sleep mode. Like they auto go to sleep after a certain amount of time, got nothing on video aside from him out in the field spinning in circles. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. But yeah, call all my buddies, call my wife. I'm videoing it, like walking up to it and so pumped. And my buddy's like, dude, so are we going back out in the morning? I'm like, well, this is the only buck I can shoot, but I'll gladly go out. And, you know, if we see does, I'll shoot a doe. So we go back out, sit in the exact same tree. I wish I knew we were doing that, because I would have left my sticks up there and made it easier for me.
Instead of doing the climb again.
Yeah. So we get up in the same tree. Oh, yeah. It really is. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll just force myself to do that every time. But yeah, get up in the same tree, have six does coming across the field straight to us. Next morning, smoke a doe. I was like, dude, this is the greatest year of my life. So technically, with tags in my pocket, I am 3 for 3 on big game. I killed a buck night one, a doe the second morning, first day elk hunting, shot a bull elk. And I'm like, this is the greatest. I'm not even going to take weeks off. I'm not going to go out there like day after day. I'm just going to plan one day per hunt.
That'd be fine. No vacation. Yeah. Just do it on Saturdays. You can do all the work on Sunday and then go back to work on Monday.
Perfect. Yeah. If only easy. It worked out that way. Yeah.
Tell everybody, hunting's I'm like, easy. Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing to it. Everyone puts all this time in. No, I know that I'll never have another year like this.
Oh yeah. That's awesome. It's very similar to how our years go. And it seems like, a couple weeks ago during youth season, I got my son one. He shot it from 300 yards. And then my wife the other night with her bow, the first time she went out, killed one. And I think like really similar to yours. But so I've been saddle hunting for a couple of years now. It's about almost three years now. So climbing that first tree and like trying to figure out, man, I know I've got what I need, but what do I need? Like, how do I make this fit me better?
Yeah.
You know, you can modify and do all those little things. So, I definitely know that struggle. And you get up the first tree and you're like, oh, this is way too much work. I'm not doing this ever again. And well, all it takes is one hunt with the versatility of what you actually get to do out of that thing. And you're like, okay, I'm modifying all my stuff to saddle hunt with.
Yeah.
Like even like just in the saddle itself, like the way they build the Molly systems, you can throw your twist bands through the D loops and then you tie your sticks off on your hips.
Yep.
And then, or you tie your saddle off on your hips, or you build two step aiders. You know, I carry two sticks and two step aiders.
Oh, nice.
And I built it's easy to build too. I mean, anybody who says you want $30 for this stuff, you can literally build it for $4 or $5, maybe.
Dang.
And it's just a little bit of YouTube's amazing. You can do anything with YouTube.
YouTube Academy, man. Who needs college anymore?
Absolutely. You know, and Amsteel is extremely, extremely strong. And that's all of my stuff is now modified. The saddle that I bought, Trophy Line saddle that I bought, I actually cut it to pieces because I didn't like the way that it fit for me, but I figured all of them are going to have some flaws. So I'm just going to modify this one. And every modification I took of it, I took photos of it and I sent it in. I said, hey, I know this voids the manufacturer's warranty. I just wanted to give you a heads up that this is what I went with. And this year they came out with the exact model of what the modifications I made, but they made it better. I mean, they made it way better. It's way lighter. But like, much like your hunt, I've had limited time this year just with kids. You know, my son was in football. Now he's in basketball. They have violin and piano, and then they had soccer and all these things going on. But I've got an amazing wife, much like you. So
yeah,
handles a lot and never, she, she knew it whenever she married me. She knew you, like, much like yours did, like, I'm going to be in the woods if I can.
Yeah.
And I need that to be well known up front.
It's always good not to spring that on them.
Yeah. If you're going to hand me something that we're getting divorced, this cannot be the reason why, you know,
yeah.
if that ever comes up, you can't say it's from hunting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, whenever it's a nice day outside, she's like, you need to leave, go get in the woods, and like nice morning, stuff like that. So I tried to focus that on the beginning of the season, because we were going to be so busy, even like rolling into the holidays or with sports that are getting ready to come up and close out. So try to focus Saturdays and Sundays, basically one morning a week, just to see if I could, and then let the trail cameras tell me what was going on throughout the week. If I could make time in between work, I'd try to go. I think I only actually went three times in this spot. So the way the ground sets up is you come in on the top on like a real long plateau, and then it just ridge banks down into a long bottom with a creek in between the ridge and the bottom.
Oh, nice.
And right between that ridge and the bottom is a little flat. And it is an acorn flat. There's oaks all over it. And I had never really like dived in there that far, because I was just never that aggressive and never comfortable. Like, oh, I'm going to have to pack a stick and stands like 400 yards through this thick stuff first. And then it opens up into this bottom, because it's like thick bedding up on top of this plateau. And then you drop off the shelf off this ridge. Like, so it's right at 60 foot drop. And it's pretty quick. And then down underneath, it's like, it's open timber, all oaks. You could shoot 80 yards in there in some spots. Yeah. And just.
So did you start with clear ground and make the, like, just manufacture the exact hunting property you wanted? Cause that sounds like a dream for whitetail hunting.
Oh, it's amazing. No, it's been a family farm for a long time. I've never actually hunted it before like this from this side, because it's always been something that, like, oh, I'm afraid to go in there, I'm going to bump deer. Like, they're not going to come back. They're not going to come back if I go in there. And I was like, screw it. I'm set up. I'm ready to go. I've got 2 years worth of modifications on this thing. I run a little water Camelback backpack.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a military version, so it's got Molly on the outside.
Nice.
So I strap my sticks, my platform up to it. And whenever I get to the tree, drop those off, put my sticks up, and then just roll with my platform. And I've got water all the time. And it's like, I carry nothing with me besides that. No extra, maybe a knife. But so the first time I went in after my, I knew these bucks were in there. I'd got some pictures on them on cell cameras. So it was a matter of just trying to time the wind of it. And there's six or seven bucks showing up on camera. Two of them that I really would go after, and then the rest would love to see get another year, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
But the way this place sets up, it's a total gauntlet. These bucks are going to get shot by the neighbors. So if you see one, you gotta really weigh your odds.
Dude, I always have my parameters set up, and then I see deer come through, and I'm like, yeah, do I really care that much? Like,
nope,
I might just shoot that deer.
Yeah, it's all different whenever it's right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, hey, to anybody else's credit, those are deer that I'd shoot too. If they got old enough, great. If not, if he walked by me right now, I'm probably going to kill him.
I definitely have a chance at him now. I might not next year, but we'll see.
That's exactly right. So, so the first time I go in, I walk out on this plateau, and I get to the top of this ridge, and I just sit down on my butt. And I just sit there and wait. And it wasn't 4 minutes, 5 minutes later, I just start hearing deer crunching on acorns. I'm like, okay, so I got a wind at my face. I know I'm good. They're all in front of me. But I know kind of where these bucks, I think, are kind of hitting their transition line. I've got cameras about 200 yards from each other. So it's all about how you time that up. But I just kind of rolled back around away from them. I saw that they were does. I rolled back away from them, got out of their visual, came back up the plateau down to a bowl that is on the end of that ridge. So it creates just a natural dropping funnel. And I drop down in it and I pick a tree out that I want to be in. And I throw my first stick in and I hook my 2-8ers up and I climb up the first stick and I just kind of stop and I look around and I look to my left. He's bedded under my old stand, like my permanent set.
Oh my gosh.
He's sitting there staring at me. He never busted nothing. All I see is just, and he's just a big heavy buck, you know, scored like 135. He's could have scored 120. I wouldn't have cared. I was killing him if I could see him.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's awesome. Let's see how this plays out. So I just stood there for a while and he just kind of like meandered off. I mean, all he knew is I was something going up a tree. He never got my wind, nothing. It was actually 2 days later, I go back in the morning. Now, that was an evening sit. So he goes off, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting out. So I just took my stick, got back to the truck, didn't come back in after he walked off. And a couple days later, it was the first real cold front. If you remember, it got down to like 45, 46 at night. And that's October 2nd, that's Sunday morning. It was like 48, 49 whenever I was walking to the stand. And it was dead quiet. And I just told you about everything that you walk through to get to where you need to. I sounded like a herd of buffalo. And I was going as slow and quiet as I possibly could. But at least I didn't have a stand on my back rattling everything and breaking everything off.
Yeah.
So I pick a tree further back this time instead of getting all the way down in there. So I mid-level this slope. The ridge that goes down to it, there's trees that are coming up all the way down through it. And luckily, with the way that canopy works, all the trees are very straight. They're all fighting for sun up top. There's a lot of cover, and there's a little undergrowth, but not much. And I drop about halfway down in this bowl, right on the point of the ridge and where the bowl starts. And so I climb up that tree, and I've still got a pretty good wind for what I wanted or what I thought I wanted, but I was wrong. And this is where you try to guess, but you're wrong, like we talked about. And I get all set up. It did not take very long at all. I was in there at least an hour before shooting light just to be ready for it. And it was really cool. The only thing I could really hear was the creek running in front of me, which is amazing to hear that at, because you can sleep in a saddle, man.
Oh, for sure.
You know, just kind of kick back, just lay up against that tree and give it a hug, man, and just take a nap. So I took a nap. I just laid back in it, went to sleep, woke up, kind of getting to where I could see. So I stood up and let a little time pass. And there was two deer behind me, and I had the wind in my face. And I could see them. They were a little buck and a little doe, and they were just picking acorns. Never blew, nothing. I don't know if there was some kind of pulling thermal up, which is all I can credit to, which would make sense, but the sun wasn't up yet. So I'm not sure what happened. I think I was just, you know, somebody's looking out for me.
Yeah.
And I eventually one of them got really close. So I just was like, started waving my hands back and forth and trying to run him off. And he finally ran off, and I started hearing something I thought was squirrels, you know, that normal, like, okay, all right, this is just squirrels.
Yeah.
This is,
you mentally prepare yourself. Like, don't get excited. It's just the freaking squirrels again.
Yeah. It's that Booner squirrel. And I look over my left and it's one of the bucks that I've got on camera, and he's about 90 yards, but he's in some much thicker than what this little opening is. And I could tell which one it was. I was like, man, that's one of those that I wanted to get a year older, but if he comes over here, I'm pretty sure he's done aging, you know. Yeah. I'm gonna do
everything. He's on the downhill. I better take him.
Yeah. Oh, he looks like he's getting too old. Yeah. And so I was just sitting here watching him, and I hear something in the water, in the creek, like straight, like dead south. And this other buck is, I mean, immediately east of me, about 90 yards, and the creek is 30 yards in front of me, dead south. And I hear splash, and I'm like, that's a big splash. Like, that's a deer coming out.
Not a squirrel.
Look over there. It's four otters. And I can't.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm done guessing whenever I hear a sound. I'm just going to look. I'm not going to act like I know what it is. Not, you know, this is just not my thing. I'll go with my eyes.
Yeah.
And so I take, and I watched them for a little while, which is really cool if you've ever watched otters play. They are, they play. I've seen literally like a bunch of 5-year-olds play.
I saw one in the tiniest creek turkey hunting this year. Yeah. And same thing, I hear splashing and I'm like, what is splashing? Like, that's loud. Uh-huh. And I look over and there's this giant otter swimming up the shallow, like 1 foot deep. And it was the weirdest thing, man. I never expected that.
Until you see them, like, you don't realize how big they can actually get. They're huge. Like 4 feet, 5 feet long, it seems like.
Or these were.
I mean, it could have been 20 feet long for all I care. They were making so much noise.
That's cool.
It never busted him. He didn't think twice about it. He just kept grazing on acorns over there. And seems like this year, bur oaks were kind of their first target source of acorn. So I looked back over and I was just watching him for a little bit. I was like, okay, he's kind of working back this way. And I hear splashing again. And I'm like, okay, stupid otters. So I just kind of turn over and look. Nope, it's that buck that I knew was down here. It's the other one. He came from the field, jumped into the creek, and made a pile of noise just like those otters did. And I'm like, oh yeah, no doubt, I'm shooting him if he gets up here. And so I, first off, just he was on the right hand side of the tree. Of course, in a saddle, you face the tree. Yep. And I had my bow hung up on the left, so had to get my bow over my bridge and across and then get turned. And I got turned. As soon as I got everything situated over there, I just start ranging, get me some points. And the tree, I'd actually put a camera on that crossing not too long before that, and they never taken that crossing. They'd always taken the one that was further east.
Yeah.
For some reason today, straight up in that crossing, and he's walking right at me, much like what you were saying. You're like, okay, how do I take this shot? But he stops at 30 yards and he starts broadside and starts heading west. And he moves about 5 yards and he just stops and he's just slowly like grazing, completely relaxed. The wind at this point had shifted and it was coming from my back over my head. And he's right in front of me.
Oh my gosh. Just,
the only thing I can credit to is that, like, over the top of a ridge, you're going to get that truck bed swirl.
Yep.
So it came over and dropped and it was coming right back up. So it never actually got to him. That's the only thing I can credit that to, is getting lucky again.
Yeah.
And so he stops heading west. And within like 4 seconds, he's headed straight at me. And I'm now having to decide what kind of shot am I taking, because he's not stopping.
Yeah.
And he's not stopping, and he's not stopping. I was like, man, I'm just going to have to draw. At this point, he is he's 4 yards from the tree, heading up to me, up the slope, and almost looks like he's looking right at me. And then he stops, and he puts his head down, and he has his right foot short forward. His right foot just was forward, so it opened everything up back there.
Yeah.
And he put his head down, and – I would never take this shot, but I watched Bill Winky do it twice. So I was like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Yep.
And just right between his shoulders, straight down. I couldn't have got any better placement, and I'm not sure how. Like, by the time I drew back, and I'm not much of a shaker before the shot, but this is a completely different rush. Just being in a saddle is a totally different deal.
Well, and at 4 yards, I mean, like,
oh yeah,
there's a really big difference
I've ever killed. Yeah.
Oh, there's such a big difference. And people, I mean, like, it's a rush when you shoot anything at any distance, but there's a big difference between shooting something at 600 yards with a rifle to even 100 yards with a rifle. Then you drop down to like maybe 40 yards with a bow. That's a whole new ball game. But when you can like drop a knife on them, there's nothing else like it. You have to be 100% predator mode. Like, every movement counts, your breathing counts, I love that feeling.
You feel like everything you're doing is so loud, like, you're breathing, you're like, okay, don't breathe, like, I can hear me, or
your
my
beard like brushes against your jacket, you're like, that was it sounded like a bag of Sun Chips.
Oh yeah, what are you eating, bolts, you know? It's like, it's, but that's all real. Everything is so exponentiated. And I thought he was going to see me, and he just stopped and he started eating acorns right underneath that tree.
Oh my god!
And I was like, okay, it's now or never. I drew and shot within. I'll guarantee I wasn't drawn back for 2.5-3 seconds.
Oh my goodness!
Because all of my pins were in the right spot. I was like, I don't know which one to look at.
Just put it on your 70-yard pin or your 5-yard pin. Yeah. It's all going to hit the same place.
Yeah. You're good. Just straight down shot. And with the way the shot happened, it went right through him. And he just kind of fell back, stood back up. And, I mean, I could just see the pass through the hole, and he was draining. He was just draining out, and he just fell over. I mean, he wasn't – from getting shot to finally passing wasn't 30 seconds. He was out of blood and never moved again.
That's so amazing.
Shortest track drop I've ever had with a bow in my life. It was great.
Oh, dude, that is so sweet. That I will say, when you said you had to pass your bow over the bridge, I had the exact same thing. And you do, I mean, everything you do, you feel like you're making a ton of noise, and every movement seems like you're a marching band out there, like stomping, mm-hmm. like just moving so much. I had to pass my bow from the left side of the tree because mm-hmm. I was expecting them to be in front of me or like to have a left-hand shot. Yep. And it turns out they come from behind me and to my right. So now I'm shooting at like 90 degrees to my right. And again, first time ever in the saddle, I'm not thinking as I'm like climbing up, like, oh, I might have to take the bow over my bridge, turn 90 yep. degrees. I don't have a big platform. So I'm basically just balancing and letting the weight of the, mm-hmm. or letting this, my weight hold me close to the tree. It's gnarly. I mean, but yeah. I will not change back from a saddle ever again.
No. And like, the best thing to do, and I know you didn't have any time beforehand, just spend time with that platform in a tree, even a foot off the ground.
Yep.
And just contort yourself in as many different angles as you can. I never used to shoot a heavy draw weight bow. This year I shoot 80 pounds with like a 615 grain total setup arrow. But I wouldn't do that if I was in a stand. I mean, I was so much into precision shooting, and now I'm like, I want to shoot them at 10 yards all the time now. Do I even need a compound bow? Like, I'm going to go get a recurve now.
Yeah.
You know, you kill one that close, you're like, man, I wish I had a recurve.
Yeah.
I could have done that. Maybe.
Until he comes in at 50 and you're like, dang it.
You're just a shake box at that point.
I watched a video the other day and they did a timer on this guy. This deer comes in and he draws back, and he was just waiting and waiting and waiting for it to get into an opening, and it like would walk through an opening and then stop behind cover, and it just did that over and over. I think it was like 2.5 minutes that he was drawn back, and mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't even imagine that. Yeah. Just the nerves, like everything at that point. When it happens quick, I like when it happens the way it happens.
Absolutely.
Where it's just like seconds, it's all instinct. You don't have to think. You don't beat yourself mentally and like second guess all the decisions you've made that day.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, like just take the thinking portion out of it and I'm okay.
Yeah.
And I've like, and not, I don't know how you are. A lot of people say, I won't shoot a deer over this range. Well, I don't like shooting deer under 40.
Yeah.
Because how many times have you been by a deer and they hear something that's close to them? The first thing they do is duck and run.
Yep.
But if they're 40, 50, 60 yards out, if they hear like a branch or something break, you know, 40, 50 yards away, they just kind of stop and they turn. They don't mm-hmm. duck. They don't just get out. They just stop and they look. And I'm 100% have had great, great scenarios with that, and never a bad one when it comes to spining a deer. I've never spined a deer. I've got really lucky there. But this is by far the closest deer that I'd ever killed, because I'm very comfortable whenever they're 40, 50, 60, 70 yards out.
Yeah.
Doesn't bother me to shoot them out there, because I know they're, if they drop at all, with the way you shoot at that angle, your arrow is going to go under them almost every time.
Yeah,
absolutely. You're not coming with so much force that you're going to spine or wound an animal.
Yeah.
You know, so this was definitely a new thing for me, but the fastest hunt that I've ever experienced in my life, from seeing the deer to killing him. And then he's just right there. I backed the Tahoe to the creek. I got up, went back to the truck, drove around to the other access, and then just drove right down to the creek, drug him through, and man, I was headed out. It was great.
That is so sweet. Yeah, the awesome. The whole like range and picking a range that you're comfortable with, it's really funny because you talk to Western hunters and they're shooting antelope at like 85 yards with their bow.
Right.
And then you come here and people are like, man, I feel good to like 30, 35 yards. And I'm like, it's just weird to me. Like,
sure.
Why in the Midwest and in the East do we limit ourselves and our abilities? And I get the idea, like, obviously you have to be confident shooting at a range. Like, don't just lob stuff, whether it's a bullet or an arrow. You have to, you have to feel comfortable shooting at that distance.
Spend but time with like, it.
You spend time doing it. The repetitions, it's not going to make you perfect, but it's going to make you better and more confident in doing
it in multiple conditions. You know, some days are humid, some days are dry, some days there's winds, some days it's cool, and some days it's warm. You know, there's so many different things, but you got to spend time. I'll shoot deer at 60 and 70 yards because I practice at 100 and 110. And like 110 yard group on a pie plate for me. Okay. I'm good. Like that's, I'm not going to try to squeeze it any tighter than that. I'm not that precise, but that makes 60 feel like it's really bread and butter at that point.
Yeah.
Everything is multiplied at that point. So anybody who wants to limit themselves is fine, but we also have to know everything's changing. Technology's advancing. These bows are made so quiet.
Yep.
They're so accurate. They're so deadly that if you spend time with anything and hone that craft, man, you're limitless up to what is actually fatal with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
You know, so I 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah. And I mean, you've got to know your equipment. You've got to know your abilities and you have to know the deer where you're at. You know, like if there's a deer that's on high alert, I hate the 25 to like 35 yard window because they hear something and they can drop so fast at that distance.
Yep.
That like they'll duck your arrow. And I see a lot of videos where they're ducking arrows from that 25 to 35 yard window. That's like the spot that I hate the most. Anything inside of 20, they're not going to duck it fast enough. Like there's just no way. And like, you know, if you're shooting at that bottom third of their body right behind the shoulder, and even if they drop, you're still going to do a double lung shot on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, for some reason in the Midwest, everybody just kind of limits themselves to 40 yards and it's just so weird. Like the fact that you can shoot an antelope, which is a much smaller animal than a big mature whitetail buck, and they're doing it at 85-90 yards, and their reflexes, I think they're they're like the third fastest land animal.
Well, they're built to duck. They don't jump.
Yeah.
They cross under every fence they get to. They're literally built to get their bellies on the ground. If there's ever an animal that's going to duck, that one's going to.
Yeah. But people are comfortable shooting at those crazy distances, and I'm with you, man. I practice the spot that I used to shoot all the time. I would shoot anywhere from 5 yards to 100 yards every single day. Like I would do it in 5 yard increments or 10 yard increments once I got out there, and I would put multiple arrows downrange from 5 all the way out to 100 because I wanted to feel confident. And I'm not, I totally understand what you're saying. Like 110 yards shooting a 60 yard feels like it's easy at that point when you're practicing at 110, but I still practice at that 60, at the 50, at the 5, at the 15, whatever. And so feeling comfortable out to that. And again, I'm not the guy that is just like, I know that I'm not going to have a 3-inch group at 100 yards, you know, like if I'm hitting the side of that little target, I'm happy with that.
I'm good with that. Yeah.
And
like even the you seem very similar. Like, I have to practice to be good at it. I'm not the guy that can just show up and do something well. That's never been me. I have to learn and I have to practice.
Yeah. But I, even aside from the hunting scenario, I just like shooting long range, man. Mm-hmm. There's something fun about it to me. Like watching that arrow just lob out there and you're thinking like, there's no way that this equipment is so cool that it, I can see it and mid lob, it's just going to hit the target. Yeah. And then it does. And you're like, I'm basically Legolas. Like,
I could
shoot anything.
Oh yeah, man. It's awesome doing that with lighted nocks, like right at dusk or dawn, whatever you want to do, and shoot that 110 yard shot. And you go, and then you just stop and you look and you watch that thing fly. You're like,
you can basically pull your binoculars up and watch it impact.
yeah. And then whenever it hits where you want to, you're like, oh man,
yeah,
I'm invincible.
It's the greatest feeling ever.
It is.
What was it like for you shooting a buck that early? Because here in Missouri, we can shoot one during early archery season. And we can't shoot our second buck until basically the week before Thanksgiving when rifle season kicks off. So what was it like having that early of success and realizing like it's doe patrol from now on?
Yeah, so you're probably like this. A lot of people maybe, when I get zoned in on a buck, I don't care what time of the year it is during the season. It's like, if I get him early, great. If I get him in the rut, great. If I get him in on January 15th on the last day. So I got to spend the last, month and a half focusing on getting my family into the game, really getting them into the game, like a real opportunity. You know, my son killed his largest buck to date. Is a little bit bigger than last year, and that was the goal, but got to spend some time, scouting for him instead of, selfishly going and hunting myself. So I just loved it. I loved hammering it down on one so early that it made everybody's definition of success is so much different, but it made it easier to help others get that. My son, my wife, we got rifle coming up. Two of my buddies are coming in to hunt. And they want to kill 4.5-year-old deer more. They're going to pass on, they're selective hunters at that point. They're hunting on land that we're all blessed to be able to hunt on, So I've just loved having the opportunity to take my mind off of me harvesting something, instinctual, like I've got to go and do this, but now I get to help somebody else do it and drive their success, So, it's really freed up my mind, really, and opens you up to like, okay, man, if I killed one in a saddle like that, where else can I do that? that was a thermal hub, and you're not supposed to be able to hunt that. I want another one.
Yeah, and it's so funny because as hunters, we like want to make things as hard on ourselves as we can, and right. I don't know why it's like that. I don't know if it's just the challenge of it or what, but it's like we always want to make it harder and harder. Like, if I can do it here, I can do it anywhere. Or like, oh, that was difficult. How do I make it more difficult?
Yeah.
I'm going to use a spear next year and see if I can spear one from the ground.
I had a buddy in from Kansas the other a couple of weeks ago, and he came in. And I took him out on one of our farms and we kind of walked it a little bit and we got done and he got to the top one of the hills and he goes, I'm going to have to take a break. I'm a flatlander. Like, I was like, yeah, man, it's totally different here. He's like, I've not felt the same wind direction all day. I was like, there is no consistent wind here, man. Like, you're hunting bowls, you're hunting ridges, you're hunting creek crossings. Thermals are a huge thing. Those Ozark Mountains are very much thermal hunting, and it's not just a Western application. We have enough undulation and enough like shear faces around here that I think to challenge the Ozarks is go to Pennsylvania, go to West Virginia.
Yep.
But I would love to one day. That'd be That'd be a lot of fun.
Oh man, there's so many cool opportunities in the Midwest and out east, and hearing the different, like, dude, people in Pennsylvania, in upstate New York, they actually walk down deer. Like, they'll wait for a snowstorm and follow tracks until they catch up with that deer.
That's awesome.
I'm like, dude, there are so many cool things. Talk about a difficult
hunt. I've never heard of that. That's great. Oh, dude,
it's a huge thing. Like, they will legitimately wait until it's snowing. They'll start walking through the woods until they get on deer tracks, and then they will just walk until they catch up with that deer. And they do it with their bows. And I'm like, that's a different style of hunting. Like, it's a whole different level just to follow a wounded deer, like following a blood trail and finding your deer. And they're doing it on deer that aren't even injured. Yeah,
that would
wild,
be a blast.
Man. That would be fun. What do you have going on the rest of the season then? Because we've got next weekend. I mean, we've got what, 5 days, 6 days before rifle season starts, and then after that, obviously archery continues till mid-January.
Right. So for us, it's so my wife got a deer, my son's got a deer, I've got a deer. I really never thought I would say that in a sentence before rifle season.
Yeah.
So try to get some bucks down for my buddies, or help at least. You know, I love a drag out. I love a pack out.
Yep.
Just hearing the stories, man, it's great. Even putting them on them, you know. Actually, so as far as the rest of year's plan, we shot rifles actually yesterday. Speaking of long range, that's another thing that's really addictive. Reloading your own rounds and trying to build the perfect spread for a rifle. Kind of jumped into that game about a year and a half ago now. And that's a rabbit hole that I shouldn't have gone down. I mean, it's so addictive.
It is so addictive. That's the problem with the outdoors. Everything is addicting. Like, I haven't found anything where I'm like, oh, that's stupid. Everything's like, okay, how do I do that? Wait, you mean I can make my own lures for fishing? I can tie my own flies?
I can do this better.
Yeah.
Which is, everything's better. I mean, there's always the next thing.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. I got my first big game kill on camera. It wasn't mine, but I videoed for another guy. I got him on an elk the second to last day of season, and I got a video of the vapor trail.
Whack,
all the way out to the elk, man. That's awesome. Was cool. And I mean, I hate
talk about watching an arrow. A vapor
trail. I know. Your vapor trail is you're watching a bullet that's traveling 3,000 feet per second, and you can see the air changing around it. Yeah. Like, that was awesome. Except I shouldn't be a podcaster in the sense that I hate listening to myself talk.
I probably won't listen to this one either.
No. I was watching the video back, and I sound like an idiot because I'm like just talking through everything. And so we watched that bullet go out, hit it while it's bedded down. It's still bedded down. And then down the ridge, the other guy shoots it, because it's like out there, like you shoot until that thing's dead. You don't want to be tracking an elk around.
You keep sending
through that kind of country. Yeah. And so, like, until it's, I mean, it was bedded down 100%. And it was going to die, but it was just like, no, we're going to make sure it dies quickly, first of all. Mm-hmm. Just the ethics behind that. But anyways, then I hear, and I just see the head tip over, and I'm like, this is the greatest 10 minutes video like I've ever gotten. I always buy this camera equipment. I always do all this crazy stuff. And I finally was able to get a video. So then we go back to the same spot the next morning, and I'm like, dude, I'm going to get these guys on an elk. Sure enough, two bulls. I get out my spotter, get my phone scope attachment, reach for my phone, and I don't have my phone. And I'm
dang it.
I would have had three elk killed on camera in 2 days. And I totally left my phone on the charger in my tent. So, yeah, that was frustrating. But
they should have had a good battery power to get it done. Oh, I know that feeling, man. Anytime film, we've done filming for a long time, and I got to where I didn't even like seeing my myself a lot more than I did be on camera.
Yeah.
But I got to where I'm like, man, you can make a good YouTube video with as great as phones and GoPros are now, like a GoPro Hero 8 and my phone. And I've got YouTube videos that are just GoPro or GoPro and phone, and they're solid.
Yeah.
And pretty good audio, pretty good picture. I can't stand the way I sound. I think that's just in everybody's DNA.
Like, yep.
But man, so the rest of the year, I mean, I'll probably break the camera out, to be real honest with you, and spend some time watching the screen and hopefully getting some more bucks down and maybe get out to Kansas. I actually just got back from South Dakota on a pheasant hunt October 15th. That's probably my favorite game to get after. I like bird hunting. I mean, you've sat there with me shooting at them. I spent a lot of time doing it. I like putting them down.
Dude, the camaraderie with bird hunting is so much fun. And honestly, that's why I've enjoyed elk hunting as much as I have. Because, I mean, elk hunting is physical. But the fact that, like, we're riding our four-wheelers and side-by-sides for an hour, like, following this convoy, just getting covered in mud. And then we get up there and we're talking, get the game plan going. And we're splitting off into groups of two or three or four and going after elk. And so, like, you get the big game aspect of it and the camaraderie of it. And so I really enjoy that. But, dude, there's nothing like bird hunting, man. Bird hunting is just so high-paced.
It is. It's high pace. You're moving. You can get to know people. Like, we were there with other hunters, no different than you and I, you know, meeting in the gauntlet. We were literally in the middle of the gauntlet. And by the end of it, you know, we knew a lot about each other just because we stood by each other to hunt birds for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Bird hunting does that, I think, better than any actual hunting sport, unless you're rifle hunting big deer in a sound closed in blind, you know, kind of a condo style blind, and just really good to catch up with buddies, make new friends, and doing something everybody wants to do.
Oh yeah.
I 100% agree. What do you got going on the rest of the year?
Oh man, I'm going to get my son out and my wife out for rifle season here in Missouri. We got a new camera this year. I mean, I always, like I said, get this camera equipment and then I never do anything with it. But now that the pressure is off of me, I'm like, I don't care if I shoot a deer with a rifle this year. I'll go back out during archery season and try to get one. But I'm gonna be up there with the good camera with some GoPros and hopefully get video of my wife and my son getting deer this year. My wife, she's hoping for her first buck. My son is just excited for anything that doesn't have spots. I mean, he's six. He's got no idea what he's about to experience. And then same thing in Wisconsin. We'll go up there and whoever doesn't get one here during rifle season, we'll get tags for in Wisconsin. My son would be free. My daughter would be free. Even as non-residents up there, it's like an apprentice license. So they don't have to pay for it. They just have to be out with someone who's old enough. And so that's going to be basically my next 3 weeks is focusing on getting the other three members of my family on deer. And then, you know, if I've got extra time left over, I'll try to get one. And if not, I'll be after it during archery season. So
that's great.
In Wisconsin, I'm hoping to get my son and my wife one in Missouri because my nephew is going to be coming out with me this year. And, he's got straight A's. I told him I'd get him a rifle if he had straight A's, and he currently does. So he's got like seven more days to keep that, and then he gets a rifle.
Big follow through.
Yep, I've got that. I've already got that sitting here for him, and so he'll get his own rifle, hopefully get his first deer during Wisconsin's season. And then after that, dude, everything just opens up. I mean, bird hunting here, waterfowl, and the South Zone's going to be opening up soon. Heading to Texas for a waterfowl and sandhill crane hunt down there. Utah for mountain lion.
In the sky.
I know, dude. I'll be in Utah for mountain lion. I keep getting people like, dude, come up to South Dakota and pheasant hunt. Hey, come to Nebraska. We have really good late season waterfowl. Pigs down in Florida. I've got a guy who wants me to do python and iguana in Florida, which I'm like, that'd be crazy. I don't know about the python. Like, they catch them. I'm like, no, I just want to shoot them. Like, I don't know that I want to be wrestling a python in the swamp.
Yeah, that I think I'll watch. Sound...
Yeah,
I'll be a watcher.
I will get video and also be like at the highest point on the boat that I can.
Absolutely.
But
yeah, 100% be a cameraman for that.
Yeah. So, but that's the one thing I really want to focus on now is trying to figure out a cameraman for future years, because like with podcasting and social media, offloading stuff is kind of the name of the game right now, because mm-hmm. we're realizing quickly that we can't do everything with it. And right. I was like, dude, it would have been so cool with how many times we got stuck in the mud, just getting back to our hunting spot, to the prep, to the hanging out around the fire or in the wall tent, all of that stuff at elk camp. I'm like, it would have been amazing to have even just one guy with a camera to help document and create something out of it. And so right. I'm going to be focusing on that next year, because I don't know if you're like me. I mean, it sounds like you've got some experience behind a camera, but in the heat of the moment, that's the last thing I think about. I could have had my elk on camera for sure this year, but
right.
when you've got an elk standing up after watching it just get up out of its bed, the last thing I'm thinking is, oh, I've got 2 minutes to set up a tripod and a spotting scope and my phone. I'm thinking yeah. I better shoot this thing before it gets away. So yeah. to have somebody that's doing that, so I don't have to be thinking about it, it's probably going to be something I focus this late season on, trying to find somebody who's able to help out in that way.
Join in on that. Yeah, that's we have a rule whenever we hunt. If you're the cameraman, you don't have calls and you don't have a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your job. That's what you're focused on. And it takes some sacrifice, but at the end of the day, if you lay down some bomb footage, then the hunter is really not the important one at the
yeah. end, for real.
You know, you start working on like an 8-10 minute video with any editing at all, or any, any graphics. You start working on time and space, and how you want to title things, and throwing your partnerships in there too.
Yeah,
8-10 minute video. You know, probably 25-30 hours of work.
Jeez. You know,
for me, I'm not a killer at it, so it takes me a little bit of work to do it, but you know, yeah. it's just one more thing. It's so much time involved. So you have to have somebody who really wants to do it.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like it'll be really cool, but I see the value in it, because you know, everybody that I elk hunt with, when it's not on video, they're like, dude, but I remember it, but I was there. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I get one shot on video. And I can't tell you how many people have messaged me already, like, hey, dude, can you send that video my way? Can you send that video my way? I'm like, you turn into a hero in a hurry.
So yeah.
I just wish I would have been more focused on that. Because even though I had filled my tag, I didn't have an active tag there anymore the entire rest of the season. And I'm like, I really wish I would have been more focused, not only on getting somebody an elk, but also getting it on video.
Sure.
And I just realized pretty quickly, that's not in my DNA to think that way. Like, I have to completely retrain my thinking to like get this on camera.
Yep. Whereas you have to be so committed to it.
Yeah. And people who start out as videographers or photographers, that's all they're thinking about. And the mm-hmm. hunt is secondary to it, where for me, the hunt is the primary objective. So,
right. Right. And I mean, it's anymore. Now the norm is we want to experience everything through our phone while we record it. And I'm never going to be that way. No. You know, I've had these conversations with my wife, my family members. You know, you sit there and you like, oh, I want to record this ball game. So they record the ball game. And I'm like, put that damn thing down and watch the game, you know, tell somebody about it, or let the kid tell it back to you the way that they remember it.
Yeah, so for real.
You know, they're going to think about it completely different than you do. So I think there's definitely a fine line and a fine balance. We get so focused on filming that it actually became a stressor to the hunt. At that point, I put the camera down for 2 or 3 years. And now I'm like, yeah, I would comfortably pick it up. And I know my limits now. You got to know your limits on what you're willing to sacrifice and not. So the in-person visual part is, it's not replaceable even with a camera, because it's going to tell a different story, because a camera can't tell the emotions that you're feeling whenever you're trying to get your buddy on that elk and like coach him on, okay, look, you need to be a couple minutes higher, you're down, or you're shooting up elevation or whatever, you know.
Oh yeah. So. Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I know, just like we talked about, everything's addicting. I hear about the guys that just get so hooked on self-filming, and I'm like, dang it, I can't pick up another hunting hobby.
That's why you got the saddle. That's why you got the saddle. It lightens up your load for a big camera and your camera arm and all that other stuff. But hey, luckily now the camera arms are, like, even whenever we first started, they're a fraction of the weight, and like, they're ergonomic. Like, I'm talking a thigh pocket and you're good to go.
I know.
So, yeah.
It's just more. I've got a good camera arm now. Of course, I got one a couple of years ago when they were bulky. But I will be breaking all of the equipment out this weekend for
their
hunts. 100%. I can get it on. And luckily, my wife is in that mindset. Like, record everything, film everything.
Sure.
Like, because she does so great with content creation and making sure that everything is documented on video. And so that'll be nice to be out there with her. And she'll be like, is the camera on? I'll be like, oh, shoot. Yeah, that's right. We're out here filming.
Click.
So I think that'll be a good match out there. But tonight, going to take her into the bow shop, get her all sized up. And
that's awesome.
I'm excited for that. So
that's awesome.
Dude, I appreciate you hopping on, man. It's good connecting with you again. And with us being local, like, we're going to have to get together and do some hunts here this fall. That'd be awesome.
Sounds terrible. I'm probably in. Yeah, I'm down. Yeah,
absolutely, man.
That'd be a blast.
Before I let you go, I got to ask, if you could hunt anything, anywhere, with any equipment, what are you choosing?
Probably elk in Oregon with a bow. Probably recurve, because I've heard that those are all close shots. So,
dude, Oregon
just won't take the hardest one, right?
I think that's a first. I don't think I've ever had that answer before. Elk in Oregon. Same thing, man. Those bulls up there are gnarly, and it's like rainforest.
Yeah.
That'd be a fun hunt, man.
I think it would be. Yeah, it's thick, it's gnarly, I think that would be a blast.
Dang, man. Well, we'll have to do a podcast after you get on that hunt too.
Yeah.
See if you make it out alive, see if it was everything you hoped it would be, or if you're like, I'm never doing that again.
I'm never going back. Yeah. Man, well, Dan, I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. And that is going to wrap it up for today's show. What an awesome episode. Just hearing about his early season success. I mean, finding a new little honey hole that he hadn't dove far enough into yet in the past. But I love finding those spots. And it's like, from now on, he's going to know that's where he's heading. Or this time of year, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's an early season staging area for deer. And maybe it doesn't work out in the late season, but at least he's got better intel now moving forward. And what great success that he's had getting his family out there. That's something I'm really excited about. I've been getting gear together for opening weekend here in Missouri. And then after that, we head straight to Wisconsin for rifle season there. And so we'll have just shy of 2 full weeks with drive time and everything to get out there. And hopefully, I mean, I could potentially get my wife, son, and daughter all a deer this year, which would mean everyone in my family gets one. I think that would be the coolest thing ever. And so I'll be packing up gear, going through final checklists here over the next few days, and I can't wait. It's going to be a great season. So if you guys are also gearing up for rifle season, good luck to you. Hopefully you can find that buck you've been after, or if you're just trying to get doe numbers in check, hopefully you find success with that, get some meat on the table. All in all, it's going to be a great year for hunting, and it already has so far. So good luck to you, and until next time, always choose adventure, and God bless.